The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number...
If I'm not mistaken...
Which you probably are.
Like a 144, 143-ish?
Yeah, that's about where we are-ish. Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. So, I mean, you got it. That's the thing. Which, by the way, we appreciate everyone so far who has reached out, who has sent us guest ideas.
Yeah.
Because without you and your support, it would just be Holly and I talking to one another.
Yeah, and that's just not nearly as exciting when we could have amazing people joining us in studio. And I'm so excited for today's conversation.
Well, here's what I love. It's not like we waited around for quite some time. It's not like somebody was lost or anything. But as we talk music and every genre has its history, today we talk with an ISG. Yeah, you know me.
Yeah, we are. I know this guy from way back in the day. Arlo, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
So far, so good.
That's good. That's
we're going to dive into a wheelhouse in which I don't know if I'm familiar or not in.
Yeah.
I know that Holly is a big advocate of you. So we asked this question, who are you and where did you come from?
My name is Arlo Maverick, real name Marlon Wilson, originally from Toronto, Ontario, but raised here in Edmonton. Family being Jamaican, hence the island time, you know, but... this island time was actually cursed by the cold Edmonton winter weathers.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I blame that.
Yeah, that's fine.
So you were born and raised in Canada?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, but your parents were born?
In Jamaica.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Toronto. So what brought them from Toronto to Edmonton?
It was around the time of the first boom that we had here. So just more opportunity was out here. Mm-hmm. As I think most people who come to Edmonton usually think it's just going to be a stopover. But then you plant seeds, you create a community here. Then all of a sudden it's just like, hey, like, why leave, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the cold weather, you kind of get used to it, you know?
Yeah,
so,
it grows on you.
Yeah.
So you were how old then when you came to Edmonton?
Oh, I was just like a baby, probably around like 2 or so.
Okay, so then you don't remember that. So then you grew up in the city.
Yeah.
Then what was life like growing up in Edmonton?
Very different than now. Our winters were, and I know people probably like, oh, he's talking about his weather, but no, our winters were much different. We used to get a lot more snow. Used to be much colder. It was really cool because where we lived is we lived on the West End, and the West End hadn't been developed yet. Like what's called the woods now was like literally woods. It was like fields that we used to like escape to. There was rumors of a hermit being out there. We used to like try to go and find him and everything like that. I remember there being like a train track where there was like a caboose that was there, and just a lot of cool things that even the elementary school that I attended, like it had just been built when we had went out there. And now like you look at the West End, it's fully developed. The city's very different. And even like it's cool just in the sense that it's become more diverse. Like you're getting more people here, and we're doing a lot to keep Edmontonians in Edmonton, which is something that wasn't happening before. Opportunities for anybody in Edmonton, didn't matter like your race or your gender, they were limited as far as like fun things to do unless you played hockey or worked in the oil industry. Now it's become a city where they're doing everything possible to bring in new initiatives, whether it be for the arts, whether it be for tech or anything like that. And I think that's really cool.
So when you were younger, did you always want to be a part of hip-hop culture, or was that more of just something that you grew into?
Nah, you know, it was always around me. The real cool thing is that my older cousin Donovan used to play music around the house along with my uncles and my grandmother and just going to church and everything like that. So music was always around me. But the odd thing about it is that I always tell the story of how I was like introduced to the art form of rhyming was in church, actually. We were supposed to be listening to the sermon that the pastor was preaching. This is at a church in Rocky Mountain House. One of the girls who was there, who was one of the pastor's daughter, was like in the back of the church just writing a rhyme. Oddly enough, called Straight Up from the Ice Age. And as she's writing it, I'd never seen anybody write a rhyme before. Like I was a big fan of like Kane and KRS-One and Public Enemy and everything like that, but I'd never seen it done before. And here she was like writing and crossing out ideas and just going through the whole thought process. And I was just like, I want to try it as well. So I went home and wrote a rhyme which was also called straight from the Ice Age.
Plagiarism already? How old were you?
I was like maybe like 8 or 9 or so, you know.
We'll give you a pass.
But no, it was the first time I'd ever seen it done, where before it was me hearing songs and my cousins, we all grew up together, so we would rap and just like do impressions of other artists, but we'd never seen the whole concept of someone writing a song from beginning to end, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge, huge inspiration.
Is it the art of creating the rhyme? Is it the art of producing the music? Like, what gets you? What is the thing that just makes you tick?
I think it's a bit of both. The creative process, I'm very much about collaboration, because I feel that if you get the right people in a room together, you can create magic. And I think that that's been personified by people like Quincy Jones, by Kanye West, you name it. Like, the greatest producers of music know that they can't rely on themselves to come up with the best ideas. Sometimes you need someone there to help spark an idea and bring it to life. So for me, I love creating, I love writing, but I also like to be in a room with other people who I can bounce ideas off of or gain inspiration from, or challenge me in the sense of, okay, why don't we try this, you know? And because sometimes, like, we can't monopolize every idea, you know, like people's experiences, people's skills, so on and so forth. Like, we all bring something different to the table that helps make art or whatever we do great. And that's in any field.
So for you then, as an 8-year-old writing your first, you know, bunch of lyrics, where did it go from there?
From there, it went to me continuing to write and continuing to just study the culture. What's crazy about it, though, is that at that point in time, and this is what's so fascinating, is that we take a lot of things for granted in the sense of having the internet, having YouTube, having social media, and having this connection to everything. But at that point in time, it was watching Rap City, which would come on
11 o'clock at night.
Exactly. You know,
if you got the channel. See, yeah, I never did. So I never got to experience that.
but for those who were able to experience it, you had Rap City, you had Extendamix with Master T. Even just here in the city here, like, we were fortunate to have pioneering DJs like Teddy, T-E-D-D-Y, rest in peace. We had Minister Faust. We had Don Joyce. So there was a lot of people who allowed us to get in touch with the culture. And even, like, when people would go up to the U.S. and spend, like, 2 weeks up there, it was so funny because people would come back with cassettes where they would record what was happening on the radio, bring it back here. And that's how we were introduced to a lot of new music, you know? We take it for granted, but at that point in time, it's like you had to work to actually be a part of the culture. It wasn't just, oh, turn on my TV, hip-hop's there, you know? Mm-hmm. People who helped it grow, like, whether it be like a Mishy Me or a Maestro, like, made it inspiring for artists like myself, because it's one thing to see a rapper from the U.S. do it, but it's another thing to see somebody from your own soil do it and be so proud about where they're from, you know?
You're at about what age when you really got, I mean, you said your first rhyme was you're 8 or 9.
Yeah.
When you really started to immerse yourself into it, because you said you were looking at the culture of it, you were looking at the history of it. What point did you like, maybe I should do this for a living?
Wow. What's crazy about it is that I used to just write and write and write and write. And I was going down that rabbit hole of exploring different artists and just trying to find my voice, you know? And I think still till today, I think I'm still trying to find my voice, right? But I think it was roughly around my late teens or my late 20s where it's just like, I was introduced to organizations like Factor and organizations like Alberta Recording Industry Association, that allowed me to realize that having a career in music was possible. Going to music information sessions that they offered, so on and so forth, and just being around people who began to show me that there was a business side to it. Because up until that point there, I was like, I had this whole idea that I was going to send a demo tape to TLC or Puff Daddy, and I was going to be like the next big artist and everything like that. And I actually did send a demo tape to TLC, but didn't have enough postage on the stamp, so it came back.
Oh, man.
You're chasing waterfalls.
Or Canada Post.
So I would say, yeah, probably around, around mid, because I was around like maybe 14, 15 or so when I was introduced to like the business side of it and received that reality check. Now I've immersed myself in the culture and understanding the music, but now I have to begin to understand the business side of it. And Then I ended up going to Nate and took marketing there, which allowed me to better understand marketing. I ended up working at radio for a number of years at Campus Radio, which allowed me to understand the mechanics of how to actually get your music out to different outlets in order for your music to be played, you know. And from there, it just became a situation of trying to gain as much knowledge as possible, asking people questions, volunteering, and just being a mentee to whoever was willing to mentor me and teach me about the music business.
So you're 14, 15, that would have been what year?
94.
Carry the one, divided by five.
carry the two. I mean,
93, 94.
So really the hip-hop culture was just starting to expand.
Yes.
In around that time, because Christian hip-hop wasn't really even a big thing at that point. But so did you want to, were you looking at being just a hip-hop artist, or where was your head at?
The crazy thing about it is that Christian hip-hop, like, until recently, hasn't been the cool thing. Like, Lecrae completely, like, revamped it. Bizzle did as well, too. But at that point in time, like, one thing about my grandmother, who used to bring me to church, like, all the time, like, we went all throughout the week. So the lyrics that I wrote always had the presence of that within it,
sure.
You know? So much of my upbringing was based in the church, especially because of the relationship I have with my grandmother. Like, we were somewhat inseparable in a lot of ways, you know? And so a lot of the earlier rhymes that I wrote would be rhymes that weren't necessarily specifically towards that. And I think that when you look at it, hip-hop in the earlier times, so the early 90s, like, you had a lot of hip-hop that wasn't categorized as Christian-based hip-hop, but they were still speaking on the Bible. For me, when I was writing, a lot of it was putting my life experiences within that and always having a slant that would actually speak about those things. Mm-hmm. And there was a point in time where, not to say I stepped away from it, but I wasn't doing it as much. But as I get older, and as you reflect and you start looking at life and you start looking at the world as a whole, like, you start to question again. Like, you want to find answers, because I think we all go through a time period in our life to where we think we have all the answers, and then all of a sudden life hits us, and then we're just like, we don't have all the answers.
If we look at the hip-hop industry in and around that time, there was that whole East Coast thing and the West Coast thing.
Yeah.
You're listening to all these artists, and you said you're still trying to find your sound, but do you think that who you were listening to then was influencing how you would then write and rhyme?
Totally. When I first started, again, it was like Big Daddy Kane was like my favorite hip-hop MC, you know? As it progressed, like, and the crazy thing about it is that a lot of it was based off of somewhat popularity, because when you're younger, like there's certain artists that you're drawn to, but part of it is their popularity and just like their swag or whatever. So each one of these artists, as I'm growing and trying to find my voice, I'm looking at each one of them and like borrowing a little bit from here, borrowing a little bit from there, but still trying to find a way to make it uniquely me.
I'm kind of curious though about your family during this time as you're discovering your music.
Yeah.
How supportive were they when they realized that this was a passion and direction that you were headed?
Okay, so my mom, not supportive. My mom was like, if you're going to make music, it better be gospel music. It better be Christian music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother, on the other hand, was extremely supportive, because she, one of my earlier passions was drawing. And so I used to go out and buy art supplies, like I'd babysit, and like all my babysitting money went into like buying art supplies. And my grandmother was like extremely supportive, because she's like, hey, you know what? This is what Mar loves. Pushed me towards it, because she realized that I could be outside doing stuff I'm not supposed to be doing, or I could be at home drawing and focusing my time on that, you know? But as I began to progress into music, her whole thing was just make sure you understand the business of it. And she wasn't a entrepreneur. She wasn't anybody who had a background in business, but I think she understood the importance of me understanding that this wasn't just like an art form that I go out there and have fun with. There has to be some practicality in the sense of like, what are you going to do? How's this going to like feed you and feed for a family, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
So then, I mean, I come home and I have the Ice Cube Predator album, or I came home with an Eminem album. My mom would look at it and then throw it out the window. How do you navigate then getting away with listening to some of the artists that you did if mom wants you to focus on more gospel?
Well, the thing about it is that my room door was kept closed a lot. And my mom worked a lot. My grandmother was home. My grandmother, she would give me my space, you know. And it's one of those things where I think that for her, she felt that I had a good head on my shoulders. And because of the fact that I was with her so much, she trusted. And granted, like, if she were to hear some of the lyrics of some of the songs I listened to, she'd be like, what are you doing, Mark? You know? But at the same time, though, it's like, I think that both her and my mom and just my family as a whole instilled a lot of values within me that I was able to look at a lot of the music. And the crazy thing was that Ice Cube was probably one of the first artists that put things into context in regards to explaining what he was saying, because when he comes out with a song like Predator or Death Certificate, there's a lot of material in there that a lot of people, if you look at it on the surface level, it just seems like it's glorifying violence. But then watching his interviews where he would break down, like, this is why I said this, it's like, okay, there's more context to that. And one of the things that I was fortunate, an aunt of mine, an uncle of mine, were introduced me to Malcolm X. They introduced me to just so many different ways of thinking and looking at the world, and also being critical in regards to what are they saying, why are they saying it. And I don't think that that's an experience that was unique to me. I think that anybody who grew up in that time period, that, like, if you look at a movie like Boys in the Hood, there's a message that's there. It's allowing you to understand that this is a coming of age story within a neighborhood in which the whole world has completely forgotten. And there was many neighborhoods like that. But you also have movies like Malcolm X coming out around that time. So there was like all this stuff that provided political commentary and just offered a critique in regards to what was going on in the world. So having that paired up with the music that kind of acted as a soundtrack to that made it so that I was able to understand where things were coming from, even though I'd never been to South Central, even though I'd never been to Brooklyn or any of these places here, you know?
Mm. Sounds like your family overall was just really supportive.
Yes, helping
you kind of navigate the music industry from an early age.
Yes.
So you go to Nate, and then I see you on buses, and I hear you on the radio, and you're writing. And then there's this whole thing about hip-hop for hunger.
Yes.
And then that humanitarian side of you and the things that you're passionate about. Explain how that came to be.
Well, Hip-Hop for Hunger was an idea that was actually pitched to us. My cousin, Dirk Gritty, who was part of Politic Live, and myself, in around 2002, by a friend of ours who lived out in Vernon, B.C. And he's like, hey, I have this idea, so on and so forth. And it was our first time ever actually throwing an event, you know? And so we throw it, and it does okay. And then we're like, hey, would you be okay with us bringing the idea to Edmonton? He's like, yeah, cool. And we bring it to Edmonton, but again, this is now our second time throwing an event, but we're throwing it on our own soil. The first one that we did in Vernon, BC was in the summertime, so it's easy to pull people out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This one here, we're having it in the dead of winter, and we're throwing an event that had never been done before. The whole concept of showing up to a nightclub to see people from your city perform, and you're bringing non-perishable food items. At that point in time, it was just like, is this going to work, you know? And we pushed hard to make sure that thing was successful. Everything from postering in the middle of the winter.
And this is what year?
This would have been 2002.
So there's like no Facebook, there's no Instagram, there's no Twitter.
Nothing.
You are hustling.
Nothing. Like, we're out there postering, we're out there flyering. And this was at a time period where you literally had to go from nightclub to nightclub all around the city, putting flyers on cars, standing outside of a venue as people come out, and you're handing out flyers to them and telling them about the event, reaching out to campus radio, doing interviews on what was then Big Breakfast, mm-hmm. and every outlet you could possibly think of, and also just calling people, which is the craziest thing in 2020, calling people and inviting them out to the event. The night of the event, we get there, and by 11 o'clock, the place was empty. And I remember just being like, wow, we failed. After all the work we put into this, could not believe it. It was just like, oh my gosh, we failed. So we go into the back and we're trying to organize stuff, trying to get ready for the show, and come back like maybe like 20 minutes later, and the place is packed. And we couldn't believe it. We're just like, oh my gosh, like what happened? But I guess like it was just a thing where there's a hip hop time. And hip-hop people show up late. So they showed up, and it was one of the most rewarding feelings to know that we were able to pull the community in for something that was, like, so positive. And we raised, I think it was 390 pounds of food that year.
Wow.
And we were just like, oh, my gosh, this is crazy. Like, and then you just get we asked everybody, like, do you guys want us to do it again? And we did it again. And in the second year, we actually had to move it to what was Manhattan. And that's where Holly and I
actually where we met,
you know. The second year was just another amazing feeling. And the real cool thing about it is that I think that that initiative kind of changed the way Edmonton looked at our impact, in the sense that a lot of times you look at impact is something that you have to do once you're famous, not realizing that the little bit that you do can actually go in and feed, or not necessarily feed, but can go and impact other people in major ways. So by the time we had brought Hip Hop for Hunger to a close, I think we had raised over 10,000 pounds of food. Wow. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. And other initiatives started up because of that, which is really good because I think it just allowed for there to be a maturing of the scene, you know, so that allowing people to realize that we're not just here to make art. Hip hop also has a responsibility to the community, you know?
Yeah. And that was my first introductions with you and just seeing hip hop doing something positive in a city where it wasn't necessarily the popular format that people like to listen to. So it was really cool seeing music being used for a bigger purpose and to be able to really help other people in the community.
And I think, too, now if we're looking, I mean, that's the early zeros. We're now fast forwarding 20 years. How have you seen change from when you originally started to where we are now?
Hip hop is everywhere. And it's crazy because, like, in the early 2000s, when you're telling everybody, like, this music is going to be big, it's going to be, you know, you're hoping. You don't know for certain, but you're hoping because you love this thing so much. And now it's everywhere. And I think that as a city, so much has happened. Like, we have artists who are touring internationally. We have artists who are touring across Canada. We have artists who are doing a lot of great things and who have fan bases, who have begin to understand the business of music. So I think that the city has grown quite a lot. And a lot of it just comes from each of us pushing each other to be great in what we do. When I listened to the music that was released by hip hop artists from the city in the early 2000s compared to now, there's been a lot of growth. There's been a lot of artists who are getting better at their craft. They're getting better at understanding how to compose a song. And I think that we've had a lot of leaps, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's so many different styles in that now that there wasn't so many years ago.
Oh yeah, totally, totally. And there's a lot of, like, I think that the good thing with a lot of the artists now is that if you're an artist who was making music prior to the introduction of social media as a whole, then you're still trying to understand how to navigate it, right? Where a lot of artists who were just born into it, they are making strides that are really inspiring because it's like they get it, they understand it, and they're making it work, which I think is going to allow for them to create something that we've never seen before. And I look forward to seeing what they do with it because, yeah, there's artists that are from the city that when I see what they're doing, I'm just like, this is crazy. It's really amazing.
How has your focus changed over the years? I mean, originally it was the business and, you know, making sure that your mom knew that you could be able to, you know, pay the bills and stuff and your grandma too.
Yeah.
With Politic Live and all those initiatives. But now it seems like there's a bit of a shift in your focus with the mentorship and bringing up that next generation. So for you, how has your perspective changed personally?
I've always tried to mentor. And I think that is just something that comes from both my grandmother and my mom, in the sense of being people who, regardless of whether you needed to know something, they were going to tell you because they knew at some point in time you were going to need that information, you know? And sometimes people don't want to listen to what you're saying because they're just like, okay, well, I don't need to know this. But then eventually they realize that, oh, shoot, like what you were saying, this now makes sense, blah, 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 you know? So for me, mentorship is important because I think that if you've been fortunate to gather information or experiences, then it's on you to share those with other people in order for the generation that's coming up after you or even even your peers to be able to open doors or get through doors that aren't going to be open or can't be open without that support. Mm-hmm. And I think that community is something that I've always been big on because I think that we often fail to realize that if you look at, let's use Jay-Z as an example, his peers, the community that they created is the same community he relies upon right now. Mm-hmm. So as a city, the community that we create is going to create opportunities and open doors. When I was working at CJSR doing radio there, I was playing my peers during my show because I knew that they needed an outlet, much like I needed an outlet. When I was writing for C Magazine, I was writing on my peers because I realized that they needed an outlet, just like I needed an outlet. And I think that the more that we do that, we create the industry, because years ago I was at Canadian Music Week and Beyonce's father, Matthew Knowles, gave a keynote, and everyone was asking him all these questions in regards to like, hey, like, what should I do in regards to moving out of Toronto, blah, blah, blah. And he, Matthew Knowles, like, stopped everyone. Is like, hey, how many artists do we have in the room here? Stand up. They stood up. How many producers do we have in the room? Stand up. How many managers, engineers, all this stuff here? Got all these people to stand up. And he's like, you guys are asking me to create an industry for you when you have it right here in front of you.
Hmm.
And it was like at that point that I think a lot of people began to realize that, like, of course we can go to the US, but everything we need is here in this city. And I think that the more we work together, we'll begin to realize that, yes, we do have to travel and go to other places, but we have everything we need here. We just need to continue to hone our skills and create opportunities for each other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Looking back over your life, was there any standout why me moments?
Ooh, I guess the only why me is, or that I can think of right now, not to say that it's the only one, but when you're chosen to be a leader, what's crazy about this is that as much as I enjoy mentorship and all this other stuff, it was something that was kind of placed upon me, and it was placed upon me from the time that I was a child, in the sense of me having to babysit my younger siblings or my younger cousins or whatever it may be. And a lot of times you're like, why me, in the sense of how come I don't get to go out there and play and do all this other stuff? Mm. But I think a lot of that is what helped create the mentorship within me and the need to look over other people and just like help them out whenever they need to be helped. And as a kid who, again, like I spent a lot of time at home with my grandmother, like watching over my cousins, everything like that. Like you want to go outside and like go play and stuff like that. But it's like, okay, your cousins are coming over and you got to babysit them. You can't say anything. You just got to do it. But at the same time, though, I think that's part of the reason why so many artists within this city and even outside of the city can look to me as like a big brother, in the sense of like, okay, Arlo's going to look out for us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if there's a why me moment, I would say anything that I could think of right now, I would say that that would definitely be it.
At Arlo Maverick on all socials. Brother, we appreciate you taking some time, sharing your story, and also all the hustle.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
You know, a lot of times we don't get to talk to someone about the genre of hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any suggestions on other artists, maybe that's something that we could look into or dive into in the future.
Yeah, exactly. It's also nice to hear about the history of hip hop in the Edmonton area.
And in Canada, because we think a lot about the States, mm-hmm. or elsewhere, but
yeah.
Not really have we looked into right here at home,
mm-hmm.
which is fun. Thank you to everybody who reaches out, who sends us messages, who hits us up on Twitter or the Insta, or we have a Facebook page now.
We do. Pretty much any platform, we're there.
Yeah, we got to do more videos and stuff, though.
Yeah, we'll try to do better.
When it came to New Year's resolutions, Holly and I were like, you know what we should do? We should do more Instagram and video and stuff. You know what we haven't done?
Yeah,
more
video
and Instagram and stuff.
We're trying. We're not social media folk.
We are not very good at this, so we apologize in advance. But thank you again to everybody. Don't forget that you could download on places like Apple Podcast, on Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud. There are a lot of great places and resources for you to hit us up.
Absolutely. You can also head to faithstrongtoday.com.